If you would like to start, we don't have a quorum quite yet, but as soon as we do, I will ask you to move your bill.
I will have an amendment, but
right.
We can deal with that later. It's purely technical. Language clearing up things. This is the Health and Human Services finance bill. Our target was to cut $400 million, so there's $400 million reasons to vote against this bill. Because we did cut that amount of money out of it, but at the same time we tried to minimize cuts to medical assistance and Minnesota Care so that we could maximize the federal match. And the potential federal match for medical assistance and Minnesota Care in this that the federal government sent to Minnesota is, or will send to Minnesota, is $1.4 billion. But we have to spend our share to pull that down, and this bill does that, so we're maximizing the amount of federal match that we can get. This bill does not get rid of the health care access funds, which the governor proposed, so it keeps that intact, and it keeps basically all the money in the health care access fund to go to fund Minnesota Care and keep people insured. This bill does not eliminate 113,000 people from health care coverage that the governor wanted to do. We keep all those people insured. In addition to that, actually, although it's still some debate with the department over a fiscal note, we had got a fiscal note last night about 4:30. Or not last night, but yesterday afternoon about 4:30, and we're still arguing over what that is. So we may have to change something before we get to Ways and Means, but we're debating that. And that relates to what's called, this committee, my committee does nothing but deal with acronyms, and this acronym is CHIPRA. And the federal government in February passed continuation of the bill that tries to get more kids covered with health insurance, and the abbreviation for that bill was CHIPRA, and they offered a lot of money to states if they increased the number of kids that have health insurance, and so we have spent roughly about $10 million to draw down about $20 million of federal money in that. There's still some debate with various people, and as you know, or as some of you know, that the federal stimulus package is so complex that some of the things aren't known yet, and so we get at least once a week we find out something new that has to be changed because of the stimulus package, so this is still a work in progress. We did not undo any of the health care reform efforts that we passed in the last 2 years. They're all intact. We have included in this bill what's called a total cost of care pilot. Total cost of care means that the provider gets a fixed amount of money to treat X number of patients, and that amount of money is based on how sick those patients are. And then rather than billing somebody for various procedures, office visits, so on, they decide how to spend the money, what's the best way to improve the health of that. And that is a pilot project in Minneapolis involving Hennepin County Medical Center. We did not, the governor wanted to reduce the amount of money that we put into the state health improvement plan. Last year we dedicated $47 million of health care access funds to improve the health of the community. That was aimed primarily at tobacco use and obesity and exercise, and that is a plan that we passed last year. It has got lots of national attention. The Centers for Disease Control is very interested in it, and in fact they are supplying the state of Minnesota with some help to implement that, and that's a program that goes into each local community health board and lets them decide. Of course, they have to request they have to fill out proposals and applications, but they decide what's the best way to approach this in their particular community. And as I said, the CDC is very interested in this. The governor wanted to basically cut that in half. We did not do that in this bill, so we're continuing that public health effort. In last year's health reform bill, that was a key component in how we save money in healthcare. And about half of the 12% we were going to save in healthcare came from the public health activity. There is reform in this bill. Representative Hosh looked at the legislative auditor's report on personal care attendance, and we have reformed that. The legislative auditor thought that there was just completely inadequate controls over how that money is spent. So we tightened up a lot of that, but we also, unfortunately, reduced the hours that people can get, so some people won't get the services they need, but that's part of the cuts that we had to do. The governor also wanted to eliminate basically all adults from getting dental care. And we did not do that. Representative Bunn spent a lot of time talking with all the groups and trying to scale down the dental package so that they won't get quite the same benefits they got before, but they will get dental care. We had rather dramatic testimony about the fact that dental care is essential to your health care. And we had I don't know if he's a dentist or a physician from Hennepin County Medical Center, told us about a particular diabetic that went to the Hennepin County Medical Center with an infection, started with a tooth. If he had had that tooth pulled for like $2,000, he would have been fine, but he delayed it. The result was 3 months in the hospital. About $500,000 spent on this diabetic because he didn't get his tooth fixed. And the gentleman lost about half of his face and half of his chest. So dental care is an integral part of health care. We did not eliminate that in this bill.
Representative Huntley, we now have a quorum. And maybe we'll do just a little housekeeping, and then as you're organizing for the next part of the presentation, we can ask you to move your bill. But I'm wondering if Chair Greiling has looked at the minutes for April 20th, 2009?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have, and I would move that we approve those minutes.
It was great fun to be able to ask you this time. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? So, Representative Huntley, would you move your bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 1362, the first engrossment.
Thank you. Representative Huntley moves his bill for the division report. Right. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 1362, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And then, Mr. Chair, I would move the HDA 076 amendment. This amendment is essentially technical. Some suggestions from the Department of Human Services are included in the amendment. Some suggestions from various advocates groups, but there's really no change in the dollars being spent. It's simply a language cleanup bill.
Representative Huntley, I've been informed that we have to change the motion a little, that it should be recommended to pass and referred to Committee on Rules.
Okay. So, well, Mr. Chair, I would make that motion as being sent to the Committee on Rules.
All right. Representative Huntley moves 076, the author's amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll continue then with some of the features of the bill. There are some, many of the governor's proposals for cuts are included in this bill, and I don't like any of them, but we have to meet the target, which we did. There are two important fraud prevention efforts. Representative Hodge had a bill, House File 580, in which Representative Abler put an amendment on that relates to some obvious fraud that has occurred, particularly in Anoka County. Anoka County has a very aggressive fraud investigation in the human services area. And this involves people that run a business out of their house and then pay their house mortgage and their food and everything else and call it a business expense. Therefore they get their income down. In this case, the gentleman was claimed to be eligible for medical assistance, obviously he wasn't. So, included in this bill then is some features that deal with fraud prevention, and we did hear some very good testimony, particularly from Anoka County. Also included in here is something that will save money, and that's there are some counties that don't do fraud investigation with medical assistance, and basically what the state will now do is we will pay an adjacent county, or we will pay that county to hire a person to do fraud investigation, and that should show a net savings to the state. And I will say if Representative Simon's bill passes, we'll get the largest bonuses from the federal government for doing that.
Representative Huntley, I may interrupt just a moment. We have some buzzing here from cell phones. I just turned mine off. So if there are other people in the audience or on the panel who have cell phones, would you please turn them off? Sorry, Representative Huntley.
Turn mine off. I have it on quiet. Okay, let's see. We basically the same thing as the governor did in terms of reducing the administrative budget of the Department of Human Services by $12 million, and it requires that they report back to us on how they made those cuts. There are some very serious reductions in the bill in terms of virtually all healthcare providers will receive a 3% cut in their what we pay them for medical assistance. We had all kinds of testimony yesterday at a sort of a public hearing we had with the hospitals. As some of you know, our hospitals are in serious problems. This reduction will hurt them, but it is not as much as the governor has proposed. While obviously they don't like a cut, I think most of the hospitals are going to survive this very trying time. Reduction to providers, however, does not include payments to primary care providers. Primary care providers are basically family practice physicians, general internal medicine, and pediatrics. The feeling that we got in last year's healthcare reform was that this country underpays its primary care providers and perhaps overpays some of its specialists. So this is going to start tilting back towards rewarding people in primary care. We have a huge issue nationally in trying to get young people to go into primary care. And they average family practice physician makes about $150,000 a year, and the average orthopedic surgeon makes about $500,000 a year, and a number of the neurosurgeons I know make $1 million a year. And the question is, how do you get young people to really go into primary care? And in our health care reform bill last year, it's quite clear the way you save money in health care is to treat people that already have a chronic illness, but keep them from getting worse, keep them out of the hospital. And that is primarily the job of primary care physicians or nurse practitioners or physician's assistants. And so we do in this, they will not be cut to 3%, but the rest of the provider system will be cut 3%. It's, as I said, there's 400 million reasons to vote against this bill, and that's one of the reasons, the provider cut. We did not cut nursing homes significantly. We did, however, cut the long-term care providers, and those are basically the institutions that take care of developmentally disabled people. They did receive a 3% cut, but the nursing homes were not cut significantly. There is a minor change that should affect them. We did delay their rebasing, as did the governor, but by and large, nursing homes were not hit that hard. Let me just see here. We did have some reductions in MFIP, and so we're spending less money on MFIP than we have in the past. And with that, as I said, we had a $400 million target. We have met that. And our goal was to try to not destroy institutions during this 2 or 3 year crisis that we're going to have, so that 5 years from now, when we need those institutions, they will still be there and can come back strongly. If I was particularly interested in a lot of the inner city and very rural federally qualified health centers. These are clinics that treat basically low-income people, and they have a very fragile economic situation, and if any of those close, they will come back in 5 years. So we, in this bill, have done a lot to protect those kinds of the delivery systems so they can survive this period. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Chair. Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, the last area that you talked about and how those cuts were spread out, can you explain the rationale for why one area, nursing homes, was cut the way it was, and why other areas were? Is there a reason why that was done, or is
we have in this state a lot of small rural nursing homes that are really in problems. I mean, there the one in Two Harbors is closing. There's one in Ely that's on the verge of closing. There's another one in Representative Rukavina's district that is on the edge of closing, so we attempted to prevent them from closing.
Mr. Chairman Pulaski. Representative Huntley, I appreciate that answer. You said you had a target of $400 million in cuts. Approximately, what was the governor's amount that he cut from Health and Human Services?
Representative Huntley.
From the nursing home?
No, from the entire account. If you had $400 million, approximately, what was his?
His effect on the general fund was about $1.6 billion, if you include the fact that he eliminated the Health Care Access Fund and spent that money in the general fund.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, what was the Senate? What's the Senate amount?
Huntley. Their bill is not up yet, but my understanding is it's going to be $600 or $700 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, where I'm going with this is, if there is no tax bill, and there's no backfill of $1.5 billion, can you give me an approximation of the number that Health and Human Services would have to absorb from the lack of a tax bill being signed into law?
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, the Health and Human Services is about a third of the state budget. So if we did not get that $1.5 billion in tax increases, I would assume that I would have to cut another $500
million. Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, I bring it up because of all the people who are in this room and because of the testimony you took yesterday from the hospitals. There are areas that you have tried to protect in this bill. My assumption would be, if there is no tax bill, there will be no areas protected in this bill, and that there will be sizable cuts, greater than the cuts that you just gave us today. Would that be correct?
Then basically our cuts would be more than double what we have here today.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Giffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions, and this pertains more to the amendment type of premium that we had not had an opportunity to see it before. And one of the big questions I have is on this amendment in general. I saw several places where it looks like there's new spending, but I don't know if there was a new spreadsheet to adjust for that spending. One of the things that I noticed was the presumptive eligibility. In on page 8, line 31, that looks like that would be a significant price tag. I think another one that I saw that was new spending was on page 11, line 11.3, a state-county chemical health care home pilot. Another one that I thought might be another additional spending was long-term care counseling, page 15, line 24. And let's see. I wasn't quite sure on some of these repealers as well, but if you could just speak to that. And then also the question I have is, you mentioned the Simon bill, that if that passes, there would be a bonus. Was that spent already in this Health and Human Services, either this additional amendment or in the bill overall? So cost, first of all, just from this new amendment.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Giffmeyer, there is no net increase in spending in this amendment. We were attempting, some of the things you mentioned dealt with trying to get the CHIPRA money, and so we've changed the way we spent our money to maximize that, but there's no net increase in spending in this amendment. We shifted some back and forth to try to meet the requirements of the federal government on CHIPRA, but other than that, there's no net increase in spending. And what was the last question there?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley. That is, you mentioned the Simon bill bonus, that if it is passed, there would be additional monies for the state. Was that taken into account in the spreadsheet or in the spending of this bill, or is that something, too, that might be something that could be used later?
Not in this bill. The bill hasn't passed yet, so we don't. It's not included. The bonus money we would get is not included in this bill. So there would be extra money if that bill passed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one more question. In regards to the presumptive eligibility on 8.31, is that new policy, though, or is that what you mentioned as far as CHIPRA?
That relates Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, to trying to maximize the CHIPRA money. CHIPRA, they will, we believe there's about $20 million of federal money available if we increase the number of kids that have insurance. And so that is where that is aimed at.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, and so if it comes, then this would be used within your targets or within what is on the spreadsheet.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, we are assuming we would get $20 million if we do this, and that's in this budget.
That's the thing.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Huntley, I'd like to direct your attention to page 38, 39, and 40 of your bill, specifically Article 3. You're proposing to make changes to Minnesota Statute 518A child support provisions. I think I have three questions, Representative Huntley, and they'll be short. Your answers may be also. First of all, on page 38, line point 29, you're changing the definition of arrears. Why are you doing that?
That was a governor's proposal, and it simplifies the process for determining what the cost of care is.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Yes.
I could not hear.
Oh.
Would you repeat, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that was a governor's initiative, and it simply simplifies the process for doing that.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Huntley, expound a little bit on the term simplify. What problems exist in the collection of child support under this provision? What problems exist, and how will this correct it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, maybe we can have somebody from the department to explain the details of that. Anybody?
We have a spokesman from the department. Spokesperson will make that.
The department, you can hear.
No department person is here, apparently.
Well, there's one I just came in.
Oh. Welcome to committee. If you identify yourself, please, for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Penny Erskine. This is the child support. And we don't have anyone here right now from child support, but we will get someone very soon to answer your questions.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll wait. The witness who is at the table, again, what's your position? What do you do? Where do you work? What's your position?
Children and Family Services in the Department of Human Services.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll just wait until a witness arrives. I mean, the last time that I think I looked at child support that's outstanding in this state was probably a year and a half to 2 years ago, but at that time it was growing and it was over $1.5 billion under existing child support orders, and I'm just curious as to what these changes mean in terms of impact on collecting that. And I'll just sit around and wait for someone to answer that.
Right. Do you have any other questions? No? Representative Clark.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if you could just go over the changes to the folks on IMSA. I know there are a number of them in here. So I'm just trying to capture them and try to understand.
Representative Huntley.
Well, I can just summarize those. The
okay.
MFIP reductions, the House proposal to this bill cuts $10.4 million by repealing several MFIP reforms passed by the DFL in the past. These include is the penalty for people on housing that receive housing subsidies, And another penalty for people who receive SSI disability benefits. We reduced the amount that they could discount from their income. There was also an exclusion for one licensed vehicle, and we lowered the amount to the value of that car could be from $15,000 to $7,500. And I don't like any of them, but that's what we did.
Representative Clark.
Thank you. I wanted to out there to make sure I'm not missing them. And housing one is, I guess, a special concern, but I understand. And what does that one bring in?
Can you tell me the dollar value of the housing change from $50 to $100? What is that dollar value to the budget? Approximately.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I think it's $2.3 million this
finance. Yeah. All right, thank you.
I get 1.794 in this biennium, and Yeah, 1.794 in this biennium, and 2.3 in the next.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and members, one of the frustrating things about this issue, and it's a little bit frustrating, one of the issues in my division is similar, which is information system, is that you very clearly see what the costs are, but you can't put a financial package on some of the benefits. Like one of the parts that I have in the SILS Women's Heart Health Program. One can go through peer-reviewed papers and show that it's likely, if this early screening program is implemented, it's likely to have just enormous savings in the future and just deaths of women, poor women in emergency rooms. There's another, just taking an issue from another state, which I just read about, is that the state of Arizona, in trying to fit their budget in place, cut all of their funding for personal care attendants, which were the people who went to help people who almost needed to be institutionalized with dressing, bathing, check their medication, help them with shopping, and so forth. And the estimate is that because of this, there are going to be people who are doing these things by themselves, getting in and out of a bathtub and so forth, will fall, become severely injured, have to go to an emergency room, have to be hospitalized, and so forth. But all of that is just speculative. And so any expert who looks at that says, your medical costs are going to go way up. But all you can see is that the money that you're spending, you can't see the cost that will occur because you haven't spent that money. And so it's terribly frustrating. I don't know, it's not fake. It's not, it's not just waving red flags. It's going to be real costs. And I don't know how. It would be nice if some of the oversight processes that we're putting in place track some of these, at least on a case study basis, so we can see, so we can get some harder numbers that fit into it. But the numbers aren't imaginary. They're just not the kind that can come in a fiscal statement from the finance department.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Huntley. I don't envy the position you're in. You're probably having as much trouble sleeping at night as I am. But you look a little better than me, I gotta admit. So. But kind of along the lines of Representative Pawlowski, and you mentioned several hospitals in my area, and what's happening, Ely and Cook and White Community Hospital in Aurora and Virginia have attached nursing homes. And three of those four facilities, are they called critical access rural hospitals or whatever, and they would get some higher reimbursement rates, I think, for Medicare and Medicaid, or maybe just Medicare, but because they have nursing homes attached to them, there's some kind of glitch in the federal government. So they have really been bleeding, and Ely has spun off some of their nursing home beds to a private nursing home assisted living. Cook has done the same. White's thinking of it. You know, Virginia, they're all public hospitals, and I saw in the paper this morning that, I think it was Fairview, did you see it? It was an article, and they said, we're just going to not take patients. But I don't think a public hospital can do that, can they? Representative Huntley?
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, if someone shows up at a hospital and it's an emergency situation, they show up at the emergency room, federal law and state law says that the hospital has to treat that person for that particular emergency. That does not mean they have to do elective surgery, but they must treat the emergency situation.
Well,
General Rukavina.
So all, even a private or a privately owned or public owned hospital then has to treat it.
Representative Huntley.
That's correct for the emergency. If you go to a hospital and you want a knee replacement, that's probably not an emergency, and they would not have to do that. But if you've had a heart attack and you come in the ambulance, they will do what they need to do to help you with your heart.
Representative Rukavina.
The chair and members, the public hospital seems to go above and beyond the call of duty in that regard, but the point I'm trying to make here is, I see you've got the 3% cuts, and like I said, I don't envy you. I know the situation you're in, and I know you've tried your best, and I've said all along that if we had to give you the most money, we should, because, members, to me, it's kind of like, I think even the cavemen took care of their people, and what kind of society are we turning into if we're not going to take care of our most vulnerable? Those people in the nursing homes, I spent the last 8 years with either taking care of my aunt or my mother, and I know how tough the nursing home reimbursements have been on trying to, hold the line. Those people that work there are just angels, and I know you're trying to protect the nursing homes, but when you have a nursing home attached to a hospital, especially when it's publicly owned, and I see these 3% cuts, I just shudder to think what's going to happen. Members and Representative Pawlowski, you're right. If we don't raise some revenue, there's going to be some serious repercussions in this state to people that, through no fault of their own, need to be taken care of. And I just can't believe that we have that kind of society in Minnesota that isn't going to take care of these people. Representative Huntley, I applaud you for trying to do the best, but, I don't know how these hospitals that I represent are going to take even a 3% cut, because they're just bleeding dollars right now, and I just don't know what's going to happen.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, again, the governor basically wanted to get rid of a state-only program called General Assistance Medical Care, which is not, there's no federal participation. This is a program that primarily covers very low-income people that show up in emergency rooms and get their treatment in the hospital, and the governor basically wanted to eliminate that program, turn it into a primary care program, which doesn't work for this population, and that would have been a huge hit on hospitals. Even though they lose money on every one of those patients, they at least get paid something from General Assistance Medical Care. And we did not change that in this bill.
Representative Pawlowski.
Chairman, Representative Huntley, I am familiar with reserves in the cities, counties, school districts, higher ed. I'm not that familiar with your account. Can you tell me what the reserves would be in your account, either in the hospitals or the long-term care facilities, that would help them absorb this? And where I might be really concerned, would there be any that would have no reserves?
General Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, if you're talking about hospitals, this is the first time in basically in the history of this country that hospitals are in serious trouble. There are two major hospital systems in the Twin Cities that are on the verge of losing their credit rating because their reserves are too low, and they, which means that whoever loans them money is not going to loan them any money. And this is a, as I said, this has never happened before. All the hospitals are getting right down to where they don't have reserves, and it's a very difficult situation for every one of them.
Mr. Chair, I got to say, we heard
yesterday from the hospital in Menomon, I believe it was, that it has gone from about a 5% profit margin, if you want to call it that, to minus 7% in the last year.
Mr. Chair, Weston Huntley, I appreciate that, and because of the discussion that we're having here and the likelihood that this number is not going to be the final cut number, I think we need to take a close look at how entities can absorb in any fashion what we're about to do. And my fear is that with your point that technically there are entities in your account that have no reserves at all or are in negative numbers. So this is extremely serious at $400 million. I can't imagine what it's going to be like if we double this number.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, you know, we heard a lot of testimony yesterday from hospitals, but the thing that has impressed me the most in the past year was I went to a meeting in November. It was hosted by a group of nurses in a private home, and this was in about the middle of November, and included were the woman that's, she's on the faculty of the University of Minnesota. She's also national head of the nurse practitioners that deal with midwifery, and another woman also on the faculty at the nursing school at the university who is the national head of the nurse practitioners that deal with pediatrics. Both of them were talking that they had daughters graduating from nursing school that can't get a job. And if you went to, well, just last August, any woman that or man that had an RN degree had 10 job offers. And it is completely shut down. If you look at what's happened in the Twin Cities, many of the hospitals have laid off 300, 400, 500 people in their system, and a lot of those are nurses. This is a really dramatic situation that's different than anything we've ever seen.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, the exercise that we're going through now, with the assumption that there will be $1.5 or $2 billion in taxes, I find fascinating. But what I find devastating is what's going to happen when we begin the real discussion, should those two tax bills fail, and we're going to be back here discussing numbers that are significantly larger than the one you've given us today. And I think that's the discussion that we need to start having now.
Representative Carlson.
I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, does anyone now appear from the department? We had questions from Representative Smith. He's doing child support, that's right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Keeson.
Well, Representative Smith.
Representative Smith.
They're on furlough?
Not yet. We'll follow up with you, Representative Smith. That's Keeson over here on that issue to figure it out.
Representative Smith.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, I would like to understand. I suspect there is nothing evil about this provision, but I just want to see how it will impact not only the collection of the outstanding arrears, but also how it will impact the obligor in the process. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I will bring the person over from the Department of Human Services when that person gets here, and we'll have a talk with you and try to get this explained.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any other discussion or questions? If not, I believe Representative Clark, you have you wish to move and amend.
Yes.
Coming to do the Area 54 amendment.
Which one?
You need to move the first part of it to amend Articles 2 through 4 and Article 6.
Oh, okay, I'll do that first. I'd like to amend Articles 2 through 4 and Article 6. These are from the House Bill 2150, the first engrossment. They're in our packet.
All right.
Amended and into this House file 1562, the first committee engrossment, as amended.
And that's A54?
Actually, I'm first going to move the articles to 4 and 6.
Yes, and then if you'd move the amendment.
And then, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the A54 amendment to that.
Would you describe the A54 amendment just briefly?
Sure. The A54 amendment is a technical amendment. I've been working on an issue with Hennepin County on the feasibility pilot project for cancer surveillance system. And there's just two new sentences in here that are technical that clarify how we would identify the cost of the position that's being created at Hennepin County. And so in the amendment, the grant should be covered with one full-time equivalent position at Hennepin County, and we in our bill identified exactly where that would come from in the Department of Health. And the last additional sentence is the last one, which just requires Hennepin County Medical Center to report the results of the pilot feasibility. So we just had left those out of the original bill, Mr. Chairman, and it's a clarification.
Any discussion of the amendment? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, I just heard the discussion about all the burdens that the hospitals have, especially our two major regional ones. So my concern here, even though there's an FTE provided and so on, and it's certainly, the worthy goal of cancer surveillance, it goes without question. And my concern is that we're putting something on the hospital and other systems when these dollars, if things are critical, such as representatives have spoken to here, then is this the time to be doing feasibility pilot projects? I mean, this has nothing to do with the worthiness of the goal, but I think it's just a matter of priorities and critical things going on. And these kinds of things kind of start adding up when you keep doing commissions and studies and all these kinds of things. That when you have other more critical things, I just have a concern about, the timing of this.
President Clark.
Wonderful question, and you'll see a letter that's coming out to you that where the Hennepin County requests to do this. This is a project that we've been trying to do at the state level, and instead of doing it at the state level, we are actually going to now do it at the Hennepin County level with their support, encouragement, enthusiasm, and it's paid for. It's not an additional burden. It's paid for out of our existing state budget. So thank you for asking that question. That's exactly what we're trying to do, to make sure there's no additional burden. This actually gives them a resource to do the thing we're asking them to do.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark. I appreciate that information, and I understand that's a request, but I also think of even in those existing resources and priorities, I don't know that a study for a pilot project is where I would go with that, but I appreciate the explanation. Thank you.
Sure.
Representative Clark.
Chairman, just a final indication. This is a really good use of a resource not to have to do it at the state level. It's much smaller. We're talking about adding, in case people aren't going to actually read the amendment, making sure that we're tracking occupational, residential, and military history when we talk about people who have cancer. So that's just something we haven't done in the past, but we have actually at the state level created the lines and spaces on the state cancer registry where those will be plugged in later. So this is just a beginning way to help do that.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Aye. And it passes. We'll now vote. We'll now discuss the...
Mr. Chairman?
Motion? Yes.
Just so people are clear, this motion now is a part of our realignment so that the bill matched with the Senate and in preparation for conference committee. We've had this series of motions with other bills before, but just so people understand what's happening procedurally.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Any other questions or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Huntley, you have any last comments? If not, we will. You're done.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just renew my motion that House File 1362 be recommended to pass and referred to the Rules Committee.
Thank you. All those in favor? Yes? No? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Pass. Thank you, Representative Huntley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, I assume. Representative Horstman here.
Right.
How about? Yeah. We'll give him just a second. He'll get out of here. All right, we still have some more work to be done, so those of you in the audience, if you would take your discussions out in the hallways, we'd appreciate it. Representative Carlson, would you like to move House File 2175?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move to reconsider House File 2175, the first committee engrossment. And we dealt with this bill, Mr. Chairman, the other day, but we have a correction that we need to make.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason for the motion to reconsider.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Mr. Chairman, I move that House File 2175, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and place on the general register.
All right. And then there's an amendment, A1 amendment.
We need to, and I move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Portman here.
She's not here.
This,
could you describe the amendment?
Chairman, this was, this amendment was one that was inadvertently left off by the revisor, if I recall correctly. Was that the issue, or maybe... maybe there's no back that I can
point out
the situation is. It's a correction at any rate.
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair, the amendment, if you look at the bill, it in subdivision 3 on page 1, beginning on page 1, line 18, it puts into statute an application for federal funds, and the time frame for the application is relatively short, so this moves it out of the statute and puts it into the session laws. And at the end of the section on the amendment, beginning on page 1, line 13, it requires a report back to the legislature on the status of the application for federal funds.
Thank you. Any discussion on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm trying to follow this, and I don't quite get it, because as I look at House File 2175, unless I've got the wrong engrossment or something in my packet, and then I look at the A1 amendment, page 1, line 2, says delete page 2, line 6 through 13, and I turn it around, and there is no line 6 through 13 on page 2 to delete.
Yours is the only one.
I guess.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the amendment should be corrected to say on page 1, line 2, delete the 2, so it would read page 1, delete lines 18 to 24, and insert page 2, delete lines 1 and 2. And then page 2 after line 3, insert.
All right, is there everyone hear that, or would you like it repeated? Representative Diskin, anything else?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other discussion or questions concerning the amendment? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is kind of a process question. I've sat through several of these things where the reports will come back to the legislature, and I do look forward to seeing those reports. Is it kind of a presumption that when these reports come back to any committee that all members will then receive a copy of those reports? Is that something I can just understand will happen?
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, those reports that generally go to the committee or committees that would have jurisdiction over the issue that's being reported upon.
Okay.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Silber. I think all reports are probably placed in the library as well, and you also have an opportunity throughout the years to check off other reports that you might want to see. So I think they'll be listed sometime, and what reports do you want to have a copy of?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that information. But I would also request that, you know, the chairs of any committees who do get a report just at least send out an email link, or, you know, I don't want to burn up more paper or something, but if they would just forward that to all committee members of their respective committees. I think when it becomes a part of a process and automatic, I mean, trying to remember to do those things can be a real challenge, especially how many of them, but if it can be kind of an automatic, but I do understand, I don't want to burn up any more paper, but just, you know, an email link from the committee administrator when you get a report to all members of the committee, I think would be very helpful.
Chair.
Yeah, Representative Silver.
As a person who represents paper companies, I want you to burn up paper.
But Mr. Chairman, maybe you want me to recycle them, but I understand your intention.
Well, Representative Carlson, since Representative Portman is not here, are you able to discuss the bill for us?
The bill was already acted upon, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
It was just this amendment to deal with the federal funds that had been omitted when the bill went out of the committee the other day, so we're revisiting it just to get this amendment on.
All right. That sounds great. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
And it passes. Now, are there any questions on the bill itself?
Mr. Chairman, I renew my motion then that House File 2175, the First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed in general orders.
President Carlson moves House File 2175, the First Committee Engrossment, to be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
As amended.
That's correct. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Passed. I think we're finished.
Well, I just had a question about this. Does this facilitate those of us who go by Metro Transit buses that are idling and yell at the bus driver to turn their engine off? Does this make it harder or easier to do that?
I will defer to Representative Carlson.
Well, they should have the engine turned off according to the bill, so you won't need to yell anymore. Mr. Chairman,
yes.
We're in the process now of taking up a number of miscellaneous bills next week, and they'll be, if they're not posted already, yeah, not yet, okay, but they will be very shortly, and we will have a very busy couple of weeks taking up various miscellaneous bills, but we do have one that we should mention that comes in the same category as the Health and Human Services bill procedurally, and that's the Heritage Building. It's the first time that one's being dealt with. When I talked to Representative Murphy, she indicated that she thought that would be ready about the 30th of the month, and that'll be the last of the major omnibus bills, although we do have one other that's not considered the major omnibus bills that is a very important one fiscally, and that's the LCCMR bill that we'll be taking up next week. But then a whole series of miscellaneous bills that have been reported out of division will be on the schedule as well.
Any other announcements or questions? Yes, Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed in our packet today we also had House File 2150. Was there any action taken with that bill?
Representative Carlson.
That's the one we rolled in, Mr. Chairman. That bill we had taken up and discussed the other day, that was that procedural motion to deal with the alignment, but we put the bill in the packet so people would have a chance to know what was being contained in the motion, but we dealt with it the other day.
Thank you.
Anything else? Seeing none, we will now adjourn.